Thank you very much. It's kind of funny. Michael just gave a talk I was kind of involved in yesterday. Tommy gave a talk. It's all one big happy family. So I'll jump straight in and say that in addition to working with Tommy on this project, a lot of people at Northrop Robbins have been involved, especially in the annotation process in this project. It's definitely not a solo effort. So I don't know how many people here have experience of seeing or participating in music therapy. So I'm going to try and give the briefest of brief bits of information as we go along, but do ask me questions if something's unclear, as if I can answer on everything to do with music therapy. So some types of music therapy, such as Northrop Robbins, which is a particular approach I'll be talking about, involve improvisation by the client and the therapist together. Although the sessions are happening usually for a therapeutic purpose, music therapy is seen by many people as an opportunity to make music. It's just on the spectrum of things we do in our lives to make music. And indeed, in some cases, music therapy is seen as the only way for some people to be able to engage in music making, and it's seen as an important goal in its own right. A whole range of people come to music therapy, but in this presentation, I'll be talking mainly about people who've come because of, at least in part, problems to do with communication, and they usually have a diagnosis of autism. So we'll start with just some observations and questions. So music therapy, at least with this client group, often works towards change in interaction. And in the sessions, interaction is obviously often thought of as improvisation or seen as improvisation. But representing and exploring what changes and how is still hotly debated in music therapy. And so we have some really broad, basic questions in this research project. How can we represent what happens in music therapy sessions? Not everything, obviously, but making an attempt. And how can we observe whether there is change in aspects to do with interaction? So we're doing this, obviously, to test basic theories and assumptions, but also in the context of an event like this one, if we see music making in music therapy as a form of joint improvisation, then what can we learn about this kind of activity in this kind of context? So in many cases, the activity in music therapy is joint, but the analysis often in research projects and in practice often focuses on the client. Even when the therapist is taken into consideration, most analysis looks directly at the client. And so it's useful to know that that this project is a little bit different in that way. But this is kind of the way in which people usually look at music therapy information. And when they're looking at music therapy information for study, one very common way is looking at video materials of the sessions themselves. It's the way that information is passed on from generation to generation, usually looking at clips of highlights of when things went really well, and learning from that the techniques and expectations of what's going to happen. And it's common to carefully choose those moments, and it's usually the therapists who participated in the process that are choosing those moments, and that's sensible. They're the ones that know best what happened, or among those who know best what happened. But for outsiders, it's difficult to understand the context of those moments. We don't know what happened before or after. So this project, in this project, we analyze a number of videos of whole sessions, which is quite unusual, it seems, and look at a set of characteristics of these videos. And we're looking really broad brush, general stuff. But what we're trying to ask is, what are the similarities and differences in some characteristics of those music therapy sessions? And the comparisons that we're making is between the players, so between clients and therapists, or between different clients, between pairs of players, so between client-therapist pairs, and between the same pairs in different sessions. So there are lots of different ways in which we can compare what's going on. So what are these characteristics of which I speak? We had an annotation protocol where we tried to lay out and annotate the kind of really basic features of these videos. There's a lot more that we could have done. You can annotate pretty much whatever you want. But we were trying to look for things that would be relatively uncontroversial if more than one person looked, and that have been implied from the music therapy or music psychology or more general psychological literature as somehow relevant to this type of interaction. So really simple things like where the client is facing. Is he facing the therapist? Is he facing the instrument that he's playing? For today, it'll just be therapist or not. Or is he facing like the wall or the ceiling or something? We can't do eye contact or gaze or anything like that because, as you'll see, the video materials just don't allow for that kind of thing. So it's very broad brush. So even more broad brush is, are they sitting still or are they traveling around the room? Until I watched many of these videos, I didn't appreciate quite how much movement there is, and it seemed to be important to me that we know whether they're sitting or moving around. And then, as another example, we looked at pulse. So we tried to look at whether the pulse that they were playing, we could identify some kind of beat in. Was there a kind of regular pulse going on or not, in which case we annotated it as irregular if there were still onsets. Sometimes there's non-pulsed musical sounds. So if you have like a rub on the cymbal or something and there are no new onsets, it's still a musical sound but with very difficult, no pulse. Or we had non-musical sounds, like me just doing that or speaking. And then I've added it in here for simplicity. Also, we're annotating where there's no sound being produced, so silence. So we do that all for the client, and then we do all the same for the therapist separately. And then we try and look at how they relate to each other. So are they both facing each other, or are they both not facing each other? Is one facing and the other not? And a similar kind of thing for whether they're still or traveling. So that just involves looking at the tears. This was done in Elan that we saw an example of before. It's a nightmare. I don't recommend it. It just takes forever. But there you can just look at the tears and say if it's been annotated as facing and facing, then you're probably facing, and then you both facing each other, and then you double check and move on. With the pulse tier, it was then listening to see whether if both of them had an irregular pulse or an irregular pulse, was it what we've called shared, so synchronized. And even if it's irregular, if they both have their onsets together, we called it shared. Otherwise, we called it not shared. We're not making any claims about entrainment or mutual adaptation because we don't know. It's just listening to it. And then in addition to that, we had the musical, a whole bunch of other tiers, including a description of what was going on in the music in the most one of the most broad brush ways we could think of. So either it was a functional song, like a hello song. There are a lot of hello songs and goodbye songs. Or a song that was teaching an explicit musical structure. So there are a lot of turn-taking type songs. Both of those, the functional and the structural, or the functional like the structural, tend to be very kind of structured and predictable. And by the time you've been going for a few weeks, you probably know roughly what's coming anyway. Or the final option was that it was free improvisation, and that tends to happen most. So it kind of evolves over time. There may be a song tune that begins the improvisation, but then they go off and do what they want in the moment. So now you're going to see how small this study really is. I've brought today just data for four clients. They were aged 4 to 5 at the start of music therapy. So you see now how exploratory we are. We're really in baby steps with this study. Three of them had a diagnosis of autism when they came. They were all referred, among other problems, for problems with communication. All the music therapists were Nordoff Robbins trained. I can tell you a bit more about what that might mean if anyone would like to know. And for every pair, we had two videos of a one-to-one session, so one therapist and one client. And it was an early session and a late session. So the early session was within the first 3 sessions of a series of sessions, and the late session was within the final 3. And at the time that these videos were being made, clients had come for to Nordoff Robbins for 6 weeks, or they could come for 6 months, or a year, or 2 years, or more. So in our sample, we have the shortest one came for about a year, and the longest one came for about 2 years. But what we were interested in was beginning and end. I thought I'd give you a little bit of an impression. So what I've done now, or what I'm going to do now, is exactly what I'm criticizing everybody else for doing. I'm going to show you a highlight. And so this is from the later session of one of the pairs we've been looking at. And it's kind of, it's using the cymbal and drum. You'll get to see what they do. I have so many more of these. If you'd like to take a look, just come and ask. Has anyone put your hand up if you've seen something like that before? Oh yeah, you're all experts, you know. Yes. It's fine. So we're experimenting with different ways of visualizing the data that we've collected. So I'll start with the kind of broad brush overviews that we've been experimenting with, and then I'll finish with the more detailed moment-by-moment analysis that we've done. So at its simplest, in this example, each axis is a client therapist pair. So this is pair one, pair two, pair three, pair four, and 100% is the total proportion of the time that the therapist in this case was visible. As you saw, the cameras are pretty tricksy, so sometimes we just can't see what's going on. But you know, that's what we have from these videos. And so in these examples, we see that the music therapist is facing the client pretty much the whole time, in both the early session and in the later one, a little bit less in the later one, but really not much difference. The client facing the therapist in green there are bigger differences between what the clients are doing. And this leads to one of the questions that kind of underlies the project in terms of, you know, how similar or different is it possible for clients to be in these very broad brush measures. Some ways of looking at music therapy would have expected quite similar patterns, and others would expect quite different patterns. But we can talk about that more later. And what we see is in the early session, you have one of the clients facing the therapist about two-thirds of the time, and the others less and less. And then by the later session, there's a bit of an increase in the amount the client is facing the therapist, a bit of a decrease, and no change. And I'm not making a value judgment here about whether facing the therapist is a good or bad thing. It's just an observation. And looked at in isolation, it can only tell us so much. But at least we know this now that we didn't know before. Looking at the pulse information, so we have regular pulse at the top, irregular, non-pulse music, non-musical sound, and silence, just to put it in the context. And this is the early session of the music therapists, and what stands out to us here is how similar the four therapists are. The little green irregular bulge there stands out a little, but the rest are quite similar. And then we take the client's early session, so they're maybe mainly not making much sound. They're pretty quiet. It's one of their first three sessions in a new environment. I probably wouldn't be making much sound in that kind of context either. But one of them is, and he's powering on with his irregular pulse there. And we see with the later session that there's been a decrease in the amount of irregular pulse he has, an increase in regular for some, very small one. And what's interesting to us here particularly is the change in the therapist. So they started off kind of as a group, maybe maybe they're coming in with their training. This is how we provide a frame, a rhythmic frame, a harmonic frame. We can't see that, but a rhythmic frame for the clients. And by the end, maybe what's happening is that they're kind of responding individually and they've learned what the clients need or respond to. And then just to quickly show you the shared pulse idea. So we start off early on with not very much shared pulse and an increase for two of the clients, a slight decrease for one and no change for the other. So again, just with these four clients, there are differences between them. I'll show you a quick example of what we then tried to do with this data was to try and have like a client therapist profile. And on the far side there, it's the things that they're doing together. And on my side, that's the things that they're doing opposite. So they're sitting still more than I had realized just by looking at them. They're facing each other quite a lot, but the client is not facing the therapist while the therapist is facing the client in this for this early session of one of the pairs. And then we see an increase in shared pulse, say, and a decrease in how much they're facing each other. But broadly, if we overlay all the three pairs, there are kind of broad similarities in profile, but then details in individual difference, which kind of fits with the problem of, is everybody going to be the same or is everybody going to be a bit different? So it kind of depends at what level you're thinking. So I just wanted to quickly show you the moment-by-moment representations. Thank you, Tommy. So we hit. This is just seconds of the or time along the bottom of each session, early session and late session, the client, therapist, and shared pulse tiers there. The blue is the regular pulse. The green is the irregular pulse. And in the bottom tier each time, the red and brown are the shared pulse, and the blue is that they're playing at the same time but not shared. And so what we see, we could talk all sorts of things about the differences between them, but what I wanted to point out today was the relationship between the pulse, these moments, and what's actually being played in the music. So in these cases, every time there's some kind of shared pulse, there's a very structured song going on. And in the free improvisation, it's simultaneous play sometimes, but not shared. Whereas by the later session, so 2 years later, the shared pulse bouts are happening both in the free improvisation and in the structured moments. And that might fit with ideas about what music therapists are actually trying to achieve, which is to teach the clients about structure and about how to use music together in this way, and then they're able to apply it across the board. So to conclude, the profiles of interaction could be at a broad level quite similar, but some aspects for each pair may vary. By having these representations of sessions, we can start identifying whether there are overall similarities and patterns across client-therapist pairs and begin to explore what they might relate to. Having such representations of music therapy sessions unfolding over time may help contextualize aspects that are captured in other ways and make predictions about what we expect to change. And I also wanted to just say something about joint improvisation in these kind of videos. We can say very little about what's joint. We can say at the moment what's happening at the same time or not happening at the same time. But the question of joint is one where we want to explore more. Thank you very much. Yeah.